Hey, welcome to You Might Have Missed It. My name is Adam.
And I'm Nathan.
And today we're going to be talking about rice futures and why you should be investing.
And why, even if you're not investing, you should be paying attention.
Mm-hmm. It's important stuff.
Yes.
No, wait, sorry. Video games.
Video games, because
we have no idea about rice futures.
Because, you know, what do video games have to do with the price of rice in China?
Probably a lot, actually. I'm sure there's some economist out there who's, like, sitting there going, more than you know.
Yeah. It's like, well, when you take this graph and superimpose it with this one, they match.
And then depending on if he's, like, a actually in the private sector or if he's in the, like, a teacher of economics, he either then goes back to, like, trying to find a side job or swimming in a pool of dollar bills.
Right.
One of those two things.
Right.
You can either
guess which one's the teacher and which one's the private sector.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
You have to figure that on your own. I want this episode to remain relevant so that, you know, in 2066, when teachers become appreciated, that they start making mega millions and everyone's like, you should have studied more so that you could become a teacher. When high finance is your fallback job.
Right.
I couldn't make it in teaching.
How many times does high finance comes up in our conversations?
I don't think it ever comes up in our conversations.
It came up a couple times earlier today.
Did it? I don't know.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
Anyway, video games.
Video games.
High finance. So I think Nate has a lot to say about some game that came out, some small indie release, I think.
Yeah, you know, just little developer.
So I'm going to talk about...
Do we want to talk about that one first, or...?
No. I think to...
Wet the whistle.
Wet the whistle a little bit, and just so that you're not, like, stuck in this large amount of talk about, like, one game, and then we have to figure out, like, okay, well, how far do you have to jump ahead to get to the other one? I'm going to talk a little bit about an actual little, like, kind of indie release. That I played a little while ago, and it's been out for a while. I think it's been out since 2013.
Yeah, it's been out for some time.
No, actually, May 21st, 2014. So
months.
Months.
So I was right.
Months.
Time.
I mean, it came out the day before my birthday, apparently. So.
Uh-huh.
The day. So it came out while I was still 29. While I was still a young man full of dreams before I became bitter and old. Earlier this year. you can track my progress.
I'm sitting here going, God, what does that make me?
Dead. Actually, just dead. Straight up dead.
Straight up just dead.
Yep.
I'm recording this from the afterlife. It's
exactly.
Kind of boring.
We actually pre-recorded all of the sides of your conversation when we started, and I've been carrying this podcast since then. I respond to them and sometimes mix them up a little bit, but... No, the game is called Always Sometimes Monsters, and it's an indie release, and it's weird. That's the best way they can put it, and not like weird in the sense of like, oh, so much craziness is happening. Ho ho ho! It's not like too many cooks weird. It's weird in the way that it's kind of unique. Amongst games that are really, I think, available in this day and age. And the reason it's so unique is because it's just so incredibly story-driven, which even among, like, RPGs, which this is built in RPG Maker, and it's very obviously built in RPG Maker. If you've ever played around with it, you look and be like, oh, except there's never any combat. Like, you never go into combat. There's no leveling. So it uses RPG Maker in this really weird way to essentially tell the story of a, probably a 20-something, just given the subject matter and like all of the kind of age ranges and stuff like that. Probably mid-20s, I would guess, probably like 25, 26-year-old, person who's on this essentially road trip to, reunite with a lost love. In order to get their life back on track. So I'll read the store page description here since I have it pulled up on Steam right now. He is set out on a cross-country journey to win back the love of your life and endure the hardship of making story-defining choices that affect your life and the lives of those around you. And without going into a lot of, like, spoilerific territory, that's what the game's about. So I'm going to try and avoid spoilers, and I'm going to try and avoid... Because it's one of those games you really do have to experience to really understand. Because until I played it, I didn't really understand what it was about.
The choices thing, do they have, like, you know, A, B choice, and it really affects where you go in the game?
Sort of. It's more the way you get there. So the story is actually fairly linear in the sense that you go between, I think, like four towns, and you always end up in the same place for the most part. There's a couple different, like, dead endings, I guess would be the best way to put it, or a couple different just, like, endings. So think along the lines of, like, a Japanese story sim type of thing where you can have, like, bad ends where you don't really make it to the penultimate goal.
Oh, we're doing a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Sort of, yeah, except slightly different. because most choose-your-own-adventure books are kind of more adventurous than this is.
Right.
And so I have to say that it's a hard game to recommend to somebody. But I ultimately kind of have to recommend it. But I can't recommend it on the level of, like, you're going to have a lot of fun playing this game. Because you are. You're really going to enjoy the journey that this game takes you on, I think. And the decisions that you have to make are actually really hard. And it's not like a morality system. It's not like there's, like, a good choice and a bad choice and maybe a neutral choice. There's really just, like, choices in this game. And you never really know if they're good or bad. You only can see, like, the consequences of them and decide for yourself whether that's a good or bad consequence within that. And some of them, you know, affect your character, and some of them actually do kind of affect the lives of characters around you. A good one that I can kind of describe without spoiling kind of too much is there's a choice kind of late in the game where you have a friend, essentially an old friend, and you meet this friend at, like, a party very early in the game. And you have to kind of choose how to guide his relationship because he's a junkie and he ends up ODing after hooking up with an old girlfriend. And you have to kind of guide the decisions through that. One, you have to save his life because you have to essentially convince a doctor to operate on him and actually, you know, give him whatever the life-saving thing he needs is. And then the other side of it is that you need to try and either mend his relationship with his junky girlfriend or drive her away or just say, like, you know what, it's not my fucking problem. Deal with it yourselves type of thing. And those are all choices you can make. And they all have different outcomes.
Hmm.
But the ending is kind of where it goes a little bit off the rails for me. I got through the story and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story all the way through and then got to the end and I was like, I'm not sure I like that.
Like, so the ending. So basically it's interesting and compelling and goes along the story. And then when you hit the end, you're like, the fuck?
Sort of, but not really.
Okay.
It's really hard to describe. It's a dissatisfying ending, but it's not a dissatisfying ending. It's an ending to this particular story. And there's actually multiple ways it can end. So there's twists at the end.
Okay.
I'll do that. And then I'll do the little twist fingers, which looks a lot like jazz hands, but much more ominous jazz hands. At the end. So I highly recommend picking it up. And if you're fast, when this episode goes live, you'll probably have like 4 or 5 hours. It's currently part of the current Humble Bundle. But it's normally, I think, like $10 on Steam. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's well worth the $10. It's kind of a good, I guess, novel. And it's going to make you think. That's the biggest thing about it, is that you're going to play through it and you're going to think. And it's going to stay with you for a while afterwards because it is a really good story.
Good.
Anyway.
That's always entertaining.
Good game. Always, sometimes monsters.
Always, sometimes monsters. Pick it up. It's on, like he said, it's on the Humble Bundle now. You can get it for any amount. They include it. We recommend more because
you'll be able to pick up other games.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it like, fuck Euro Truck Simulator, but Grid and Grid 2.
Oddly enough, pay
that extra $6.38 or however much it is to get Grid and Grid 2. Those are good.
I introduced a friend of mine to the Humble Bundle this 2 weeks ago when this bundle was fresh because he was watching Euro Truck Simulator 2 Let's Plays.
Oh, God.
On TV. And I'm like, oh, I think I might have an extra code for that. Let me go look. And it just so happened that at that moment, that Humble Bundle had just started. And what's in the bundle? Euro Truck Simulator 2. But he actually had a blast playing it. It's not my kind of game. But
almost. Me neither. Almost depressing.
Yeah. But he definitely, you know, he's a weird guy. So we'll leave it at that. Anyway. So on to this other game,
which is very
similar, I think, to Always Sometimes Monsters, right?
Yeah. So I've been playing Grand Theft Auto 5 on the PS4. Mm. No, I'm kidding.
I hear it's a driving simulator. You drive at normal speed limits, stop at crosswalks. Helping old ladies across the street is a big part of it, if I recall.
Avoid hitting pedestrians, you know, things like that. I mean, help the police whenever possible, things like that. Yeah. So the real game we were talking about is, and I'm sure people, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably look at video game blogs too, and you're probably tired of hearing about it, but I don't care. It's Dragon Age Inquisition, and it's amazing. Now, if you want to learn about the combat and everything like that, go watch some Let's Plays.
In fact, you could probably go watch one of your Let's Plays.
One of mine?
No, because they took it out.
Twitch didn't like my Let's Play because I still had the background music on, and the background music is copyrighted, so they eliminated all the audio from my Let's Play
on
the release night, which kind of sucks. I'll be honest.
Yeah, they're a little overzealous about that.
Yeah, that was
harsh. That's another reason why you should stream it on PC, because you can do a local recording.
Yeah. I can do a local here, too. Actually, I could do a YouTube upload, and then YouTube only singles out the sections.
There you go.
Where the copyright music is. So I'm thinking about doing just a YouTube upload next time. But anyway, Dragon Age, awesome game, lots of characters, all the things you hear about if you just look at the trailer. I can't stop watching the trailers. There's a song.
Don't you own the game?
Huh?
Don't you own the game at this point?
Yes, but there is one of the trailers is just awesome. It's there's a song by the Phantoms that's the background of it, and it's just amazing. So I don't actually know who
the Phantoms are.
Yeah, well, I didn't either until they released this trailer, and, you know, I actually looked up to find the song because it was so awesome. So, found, bought the song. Good job.
I do like that I look up the Phantoms on Google, and here's what comes up. 1 year after an accident claims the lives of high school basketball players, members of the team compete for the championship.
Wow, that's funny.
Awards. Canadian Screen Award for Best Direction in a Dramatic Program or Miniseries. So yeah, apparently the Phantom's really good.
Right, yeah. The Phantom, they're, yeah. But yeah, no, the trailer's really awesome with that one. It's the Breach trailer. It's really awesome. Loving the game. And this game eats hours alive. I saw a Facebook post by Min Ling Tan, the Razer guy, the CEO of Razer. And he posted that, like, started playing on Friday and Dragon Age Inquisition must have some type of time paradox built in because after a few seconds it was Sunday night.
How was your experience with that, Ben?
About right.
How many hours...
So far, I have sunk 20 hours into the game since its release a week ago. And the only reason it's not more is because I have actually banned myself from playing it on days that I work. Because I know if I play it in the morning, I'm going to be late for work. And if I play it at night, I'm going to stay up too late. And the next day, I'm going to be late for work. So it's that it will drag you in and keep you playing. I'm actually stuck for the last 3 hours of play. I'm stuck behind. I went through the story mission a little too fast, and I'm stuck behind this most recent story mission because I'm too low level. I don't want to go in and get myself beat like a little bitch. So I'm just doing side missions and stuff, and there is so much to do. And it was funny because there was actually an article written also elsewhere that there's too many side missions in the game. And I'm like, there's not too many side missions in the game. I'm still doing them, and I'm still too low level. So need more.
That could be a question of pacing as well.
True.
In the sense that if they're pacing out the main storyline so, I guess, poorly is the best way to put it, that you end up there and you're like, oh, you have to grind.
That really was my fault. I did the last two probably before I should have. The last two story missions before I should have. So I was rushing through the story.
Who is the developer for this one, for Dragon Age Inquisition?
BioWare?
Really? That actually surprises me a little bit. If it is, in fact, BioWare, because they're actually usually normally like with their open world games, and even with games with like the story missions and storylines and stuff like that, they're usually pretty good at, they usually implement scaling into the system so that even if you're like moving along the main storyline really quickly, you're never going to like underlevel it or something like that.
See, and that's really funny because that's something that during the streams during development, they were doing a lot of Twitch streams, and I've been really excited about this game, so I was watching them. But that was one thing that they pointed out on an almost regular basis. Was like, look, these guys are too high for us. There is no scaling in this game.
Okay.
Yeah, they said we could have done scaling, but we found that it allowed for too much freedom.
Okay.
being able to do certain things way before you should really do them. Like there are certain areas in even the first zone, and really as you spread out the zone, it gets to a point where it's like, okay, this is the first zone, is this little section of this zone and this section of this zone over here. And then the second one is a little out further and a little further down here, and then you can keep basically, you keep widening out. My problem was I was skipping that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was skipping the actual, like, development of the Inquisition and broadening what I should be doing. Because your characters tell you, you should probably go out and, you know, spread out and get more of the things. And you're like, but I want to go there.
Okay.
And so I did, and now I'm like, but truthfully, you say grind, and what I'm doing is not a grind.
Okay.
'Cause I'm still going through and making progress. I'm not just, you know, going through and killing people just to gain levels. I'm still progressing. Basically, I'm catching up on what I was
doing. But like you can't. I guess my kind of, cause a grind is very different for different people. And, you know, if they don't make it feel like one, like if it still feels like, you know, you're not necessarily making progress, because I think character progress is something you can always make, but that you're not repeating yourself a lot, or you're not getting bored by the side quest or something like that. That's great.
Yeah.
But I'm always a little bit nervous when, either like the side quests aren't so compelling that you feel like going and doing them right away. You know, compared to the main storyline, maybe not so much, but
yeah,
or they're not so obvious, but there's such a necessary part of the game. It seems odd to me that you wouldn't have that, a better balance on that type of thing. And well, that's not, like I said, I haven't played it. This is, yeah, no, this is just.
Yeah, it was just parts where I was like, okay, I know what's coming up here. I want to get to that. Mm-hmm. And so I skipped things like going to get the stable master. I skipped doing that until just today. And a couple other things. But the side quests are, see, I call them side quests because that's the industry term for.
Well, it's not the main story quest.
Exactly. It's side quests, but they have an effect on what you can do in the main story quest.
Okay.
So, like, as you expand, you get more options for certain things.
So talk a little bit more. Like, you keep saying, like, expand, but I don't really understand what that means.
Right. So, as you go out, you establish for example, the Hinterlands. There's about 9 camps that you can set up to establish small bases in the Hinterlands.
So it's kind of a commander setup.
Exactly.
So can you describe kind of the mechanically, like, is it an RPG / RTS? You know, can you give me a broad overview of the mechanics so that we can drill down into the story a little bit more?
Of the combat,
how it works.
Or, well, as
what is the game?
Do you have an hour and a half? No.
Technically, yes.
But right, we have however long we want to record. But anyway, basically, it's an RPG, and you can turn and you can use it as kind of an RTS because during combat, you can actually pause combat and go through and tell your people, "I want you to go do this, you to go do this, you to go do this," and, you know, strategize with your team as you go through. That's the combat. There's not actually that much, and you don't actually get that much experience through the combat. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is the expansion of the Inquisition. Like I said, establishing those camps that I was talking about, exploring the world. There are
So you were kind of describing it to me earlier. You have like a war map.
Right. I'm actually getting to that.
Oh, okay.
Right. Well, the war map actually has nothing to do with the expanding the camps in the individual zones. The war map is the way to get to the zone, but then it has nothing to do with the camps. So, okay. Like, you go to the war map and you say, "I want to go to this zone," and it takes you to the initial camp in that zone, and then you can teleport to your other camps as kind of, you know, bases of operation. And they'll have requisitions at the camps and things like that. And when I say requisitions, it's gathering kind of organic gathering quests, because just because you haven't finished one requisition doesn't mean you can't go on to the next, but you still have the old requisition. Like, the first requisition that you get in the game, I just finished today because there was one thing that you had to find in the Hinterlands that, yeah. Anyway, so just finished that one today. But you can do all these requisitions, and it's basically like better field tents for your people, better weapons, cages for prisoners, things like that, just basically building the Inquisition. And that's a lot of what it is. So it's less like the other one, like 1 and 2, where it's, you know, you against this main evil. It's you're gathering to become a force.
Okay.
In this society.
Do you have to have played the previous games to really understand what's
going on? No, because they fill it in pretty well for you. At the end of the second game, the Chantry, there was a meeting of the leaders of the Chantry and the Mages and the Templars, and it got blown up. This is the establishment of the Inquisition. So basically, that explodes, boom. Eliminates basically the leadership of the 3 main factions in the world, being the Chantry, the Templars, and the Mages. And you are actually, when this explosion happens, it opens a new rift from the underworld, which rifts from the underworld you dealt with in Dragon Age 1 and 2. Dragon Age 1, you dealt with a blight, which was a huge rift. Dragon Age 2, it was a smaller, just kind of rifts popping. And Dragon Age 3, there's a big rift, and you're dealing with the smaller ones. But because I'm trying to fill in the two games worth of stuff, because Dragon Age 1 and 2 actually happen around the same time, like almost exactly the same time.
Okay.
And then it's most of Dragon Age 2 happens as Dragon Age 1 is occurring. Like, one of the first things that happens in the first Dragon Age, you are actually, the character from Dragon Age 2 is actually a refugee fleeing from that. And then so you go to this other town, and that's where Dragon Age 2 happens. And then the results of, and then it basically goes slightly after Dragon Age 1. This event happens, and then Dragon Age 3 Inquisition happens as a course of that. Basically, with this explosion, you get spit out of the blight somehow. Like, you are the only survivor of this explosion somehow, and you come out with the power to seal the rifts, which nobody has had.
And the rifts are what are creating the blight.
The rifts basically, they create the blight. They are spitting out demons and ghouls and things like that. It's nasty stuff. So basically, the Inquisition is established because the other three powers are in shambles. And the Inquisition was something that was established, like, you know, it's one of those, 1,000 years ago, this happened, so the Inquisition was established. Those, there's rules for establishing the Inquisition, and yeah, so that gets done. You're not exactly the leader of it in the beginning, though you are part of the group, and you are kind of the decision maker. I still haven't been actually named the leader. Again, 20 hours in.
You're kind of the main commander. You're making most of the main decisions.
Yeah, you've got your four advisors, and they tell you like the different things. You've got your spy master, your military guy, the diplomatic chick, the leader who used to be a member of another group, and five. And then the administrator. So you've got these five people, and this is your war council. And these people advise you on things that you're going to be doing. And then you're basically, okay, this is what we can do. They've put, and we, you're the decision maker, because you're the person who, in the end, has to go out and do it anyway. Then on to go through, and then I'm not going to go any further. Because any further and you get outside of the prologue, and then it turns into really big spoilers from here on out. But basically, okay, your whole deal is to gather enough force to close the main rift, while you establish the Inquisition as a major power in the world.
Okay.
One of the ways that you do that is basically the central thing is you have a central town. It's called Haven to start out with. I'm still in Haven, although I know there's another central town coming up because something happens to Haven. I'm not there yet, though, just because that's in the developer stuff. And they're like, this is Skyhold. And I'm like, I haven't even been there yet. But yeah, so you're in Haven, and this is your basic central seat of power. Where all of your soldiers are gathering, where everything's starting out. And in Haven, basically, you've requisitioned the chantry, basically the church, as your base of operations. And the back room is the war room, the war table. And that's where everything basically is administered from. This is like your administrative thing. This is the thing that I'll do before work because I go into it. You can, and what you can do at that point is you can send your people on different missions dependent upon how you want them to be handled. Like, you have three different options. You have your, excuse me, you have your diplomatic person, your spy master, and your military leader. And depending upon how you do how you pick them, that's how this problem's going to be solved. And that will actually affect how the world perceives you.
Okay.
Is dependent upon how you handle things. Like, if you handle everything diplomatically. Right now, the Chantry's kind of nervous about me because I had one of their people killed because she was doing stupid shit. Well, I had her disappeared, and they can't link me to it, but they pretty much know what happened.
none too subtle there.
Yeah, well, it was the person disappeared, and she had been bad-mouthing me quite extensively, so I disappeared her. They're all like, okay, nobody's pointing fingers, but we kind of know what happened.
So
all that. And, I mean, you can send your people out on different missions to do those different things. You actually affect the world a lot. And then there's also the war table, you spend very little time actually doing stuff on it. Unless you're like me and you like the administrative side and you want to do all the little missions. Because basically all it is you say, okay, this mission to go do this thing, I'm going to send my people out to do it. It'll take an hour, the timer counts down, and then you just collect the reward. Done. I also like, you know, you can, and that's regardless of whether you're playing the game, that timer goes.
So as far as the kind of the main, I guess it's hard to say the main combat, but the main kind of, it's very similar to the, is it similar to, more similar to the original Dragon Age or to kind of Dragon Age 2 as far as combat goes?
It's kind of a mix. Okay. You have the, I forget if you had the time stopping in Dragon Age. I believe you did. But it is a lot like, it's a combination of the two in that it's more intuitive and less micromanage-y.
Mm-hmm.
But you still can.
Is the AI better on it?
Oh, much. Oh, God, okay. Much. Yeah.
So that might be part of the reason why it feels less micromanage-y is because you can just not micromanage them and they don't run around like idiots.
Yeah. Instead of doing like in Dragon Age 2, I know, and in Dragon Age 1, where you set these little like triggers, like if this, then do this, or if this, then do this, you set their abilities, like do this and this and this and this. And I have them all just, you know, like do that whenever you feel like it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you can set it. It's like, don't ever do this ability or do this ability whenever you fucking can. Top priority always. And there's no healing.
Oh, okay.
There's no healing. You heal with potions. But
has that been true across all the games? Or?
No. In fact, actually, that's what the reason they eliminated healing in the third one is because a lot of the times, that's what you spent most of your time doing in Dragon Age 1 and 2 is going through, like, just letting them do combat and you go through and pick out the healer and toss out the heals as you can. Which, you know, I like playing the healer. It was fun. But goddamn, man.
You'd rather be in the action than
I'd like to be
sitting in the back essentially watching health bars.
Exactly. I mean, and you do sometimes have to, I mean, I've looked at it because the trigger is default set at once this person hits 30%, they'll use a potion. And I'll be like after combat looking at a guy and I'm like, you're at 40, use a potion. Fuck it.
Well, I mean, it's a good threshold, I think.
It is. 30% is a great threshold because it's really hard for any, even like, well, unless it's the one of the dragons, because there's like 8 dragons and they're death on wings. They would one-shot the fuck out of you, but that you really can't do anything about.
Well, I mean, it is Dragon Age.
So exactly.
If there weren't dragons, you'd feel a little cheated.
Right.
But no, I was thinking of the AI when you're describing that, and I'm like, it just brings up memories of Star Ocean. Star Ocean, I think, 4 or something like that. But I just remember the AI just being so terrible in that. Just absolutely awful.
No, there is a little bit of, you know, I have said, what the fuck are you doing over there a couple times. But for the vast majority of the time, the AI is spot on. And really, like, the only time I find myself micromanaging the battles is during, like, boss battles. I'll micromanage a bit. But like during just regular encounters, I don't even pause the play, except initially because I'm kind of on the outskirts and I pause the play to go look and make sure they're not like much higher than me. Because the zones hit a spot. It's like I said, outside of this circle, they're much higher than you. It's the next step. Don't go there. But you can still go there. So I'll go to a spot and it'll be like, oh, hey, they're level 12 and I'm level 7. I'm going to die if I go here. Just to give you an eye of the level rankings, level 20 is max.
Okay.
So the difference between level 7 and level 12 is huge.
It's actually much bigger than it sounds like.
Yeah, it's massive difference. I mean, you play all these games with like level 100 being the max one, and level 7, level 12, not that much of a difference. In this case, level 7 and level 12, that's about a quarter of the levels. So it's a jump.
So would you say overall you're enjoying the game?
Oh my God.
No.
Yes.
Nope, yes. Not recommend it. Don't go buy it.
Go buy it.
Terrible game.
Do it like I did and buy it twice.
Why did you buy it twice?
I bought it on the PC last year. And then a friend of mine talked me into buying it on the PS4 because he wanted to play it multiplayer on the PS4.
And I told him, go get a good PC. Why are you not playing this on a PC?
Because I've been playing a lot of stuff on the Nate's PS4 friend. Lately. I like my PS4. It's really nice.
No, I'm saying why is your friend not playing it on the PC?
Because he's broke. Is it because he's broke and he can't afford
reason
to
have a PC?
No.
PCs are for people who are broke.
PlayStation Plus is for people who are broke where you get free games.
Have you seen the Humble Bundles? I have more games than I can ever play.
Exactly.
Ever, literally ever play.
Have I seen the Humble Bundles?
Have you ever heard of this thing?
Have it's you called listened the Humble to Bundle. Season one?
No, I slept. I was actually sleeping through most of that.
Yeah, where we spent like almost every show with our Humble Bundles weekly spotlight. Which we did again today.
Well, only if you can get there in like 3 hours. I feel bad that I spent so much time on WoW last week because I'm going to have to amend my review a little bit this week, which is to say if you enjoy WoW, go pick it up for like a month and then drop it like it's hot. Because it's not hot. It's actually really cold and kind of boring after a while.
So. Yeah, I'm kind of glad that he did the, if you guys didn't know, if you didn't listen to the episode, he did it solo last week because I was, headaches. Anyway, so he did it last week solo and did the WoW thing, and it would have been really bad for me to be there because I was in the beta for, Warlords of Draenor. I made it 2 hours and decided to cancel my account.
Yeah, no, again, it's not bad. And it's not enjoyable
bad.
Game up until you finish, and then it's an MMO again.
And then, it's basically the same thing you've been playing for. How long have we been playing WoW?
I don't want to think about it. I didn't start like way back in the original beta, but I think I came in like a year or so out from when it launched. So
yeah, I know.
9 years, I guess, because I guess they're having their 10th anniversary. I guess they're having their 10th anniversary.
Yeah, I think
I know very well they are.
Yeah.
So we highly recommend, or at least I highly recommend, going and picking up Always Sometimes Monsters.
I highly recommend it just because it sounds really good and I'm probably going to play it.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, and it's hard to say because it's...
It's a good game.
It's a good game, but it's all the feels of games.
It's all the game with all the feels.
I'm going to say this. You're either going to really enjoy it or really hate it, or you're both going to really enjoy it and really hate it by the end of that game. You're going to get to the end and you're going to be like, I'm really glad I played this game, but I never want to play this game again.
Okay.
It is a good experience, though. I think as far as seeing what video games are capable of, beyond kind of the normal gameplay that we're used to for the most part, because it's still definitely a game and there's still definitely those elements of choice in it, but it's
a story game.
It's a story game, but yeah.
Go play it. You'll find out what he's talking
about. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Or you won't. One of the two. you'll get partway through and you're like, what is this hipster shit? Because actually, I think in the first 20 minutes, I was like, what is this hipster shit? And then continued playing. And I was like, oh, it's this play, hipster exactly. shit. Okay.
Oh, it's this hipster. There you go.
But yeah.
Yeah. And recommend Dragon Age.
Because pretty standard awesome.
Game. Because awesome.
That's, definitely a game.
It's a game. It's a game. You should play it.
It'll show you a good time. Good night on the town. For good several nights on the town.
Good several nights on the town. And then you'll wonder, what have I been doing for the last several nights? I thought I just sat down.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a good game if you're going to time warp through it.
Yeah, I did that.
I imagine for me it's going to be like Skyrim in that I'm going to pick it up in a few years.
Yeah.
And maybe play it. And then I'll get lost in it and I'll be like, oh yeah, no, now I can see why this was so good. But I'm going to avoid it for a while because of all the hype around it, I think.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Just wait for it to go on Steam sale.
Bam. Exactly. Like I said, in a couple years.
Right.
When it's like, you know, it and all of the DLC are like $9.
Ah, DLC.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I didn't even think about DLC.
DLC. Oh, I already know it's coming because it's, you know, EA. So.
Right.
And BioWare. So.
Yeah. Well,
we already know that this is happening.
They have said they are going to release DLC, but it's not going to be for a while.
Really? That's surprising.
Well, look how much money they're making on just the base game right now.
Right, right. But there's, I don't know, there's statistics that show DLC purchases tend to be higher when you release it near the start of the game. So,
well, I think they included like the first DLC or something like that in the collector's edition pre-order or something like that.
All right. Anyway.
But anyway.
Awesome. You can always find us over on YMHMI.com.
Or facebook.com/YMHMI. Or
at YMHMI on Twitter. I'm going to try that one this time.
And other places.
Oh, YouTube.com/ You might have missed it.
You might have missed it. Because, damn it.
Which, again, still haven't updated that in a while.
Yeah.
And then sorry. Nate's latest stream got caught by the censors.
The censors. All the sensors.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week. I was on YouTube and I was just randomly running through clips at some point for some reason. And I ran across the, the original voice for Darth Vader, the actual actor.
Oh, really?
Who plays Darth Vader.
Oh
in the
my
movie.
God.
So he's
that must have been different.
The movements. Oh yeah. No, he's Scottish.
Oh God.
and
dude, a Scottish Vader actor. Would be awesome.
Like he did the motions fine, but he's not a good actor.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, you compare like James Earl Jones versus this guy. And it's just like, I cannot take this guy seriously. Like, he's not menacing.
It's a terrible actor playing Scottish Darth Vader. No.
Scottish. Well, he's not really Scottish because you don't ever hear the accent when he's talking.
Oh, okay.
But that's what they're saying. He's the Scottish guy. And I'm like, oh, okay. I can kind of, if I stretch, hear the brogue a little bit. But he's okay at, you know, getting the standard accent. But yeah, he's just like, you hear him and you're like, that's not Darth Vader.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Mike Tyson as Darth Vader. No, that's not how bad it is.
Oh man, that'd be terrible.
You're a leader of the Rebel Alliance.
The leader of a Rebel Alliance and a traitor.